The answer is simple, and you may not like it. Save up and pay cash for your cars. Yes, I'm serious. Hey, if you're like the average American, you're probably paying around $500 a month in car payments anyway. Why not just pay yourself that $500 a month for a year and buy yourself a $6,000 car? My friend got a beautiful Mercedes for that, remember? Drive it around while you keep saving, then sell it and upgrade again. All it takes is a new decision to pay yourself instead of the bank. If you have a car loan, go crazy and pay it off quickly, or even sell it to get this process rolling on paying yourself instead of the bank. The first car you buy with cash might not be your dream car, and that's okay. But just because it's not your dream car doesn't mean it has to be a junker. Buying used doesn't mean buying a crappy car. You can even find a nice, well-cared-for 10-year-old Lexus or Infiniti at a great price in pretty much any city in America. Pick out a car with a body style that doesn't change often. I can't tell you how many luxury brands I see on the road, and I have no idea what year they are. They could be brand new or 8 years old, and I wouldn't be able to tell just by looking at it. The moral of the story is this: own your cars, don't let them own you. Relationship damaging loans. Some of the most damaging debts people get into are loans to or from friends or family. It's sad how many relationships are strained or even ruined because of money. The stories I've heard from people who have lost decades-long friendships or broken family ties because of friendly loans are heartbreaking. It's always, always best to keep debt out of your relationships. What are friends for? I understand the intention behind loaning money to someone you love. A parent wants to help their grown child with college or a new car, so they loan them money, expecting them to pay it back. A woman loans her brother money to start a new business. A guy loans his friend money because he's in a tight spot. People in these situations often have the best intentions. But what are they really risking? First, they are risking that friend or family member never paying them back. Second, they risk losing the relationship because almost always stress and judgment start to seep in. Here's what happens when you loan money to a friend or family member. You start looking at what they're doing more closely. You see them take a vacation and you think, they still owe us $3,000. Then the resentment sets in. Or if you borrow money from your brother and sister-in-law, suddenly Christmas with the whole family feels like you're sitting by the Christmas tree opening gifts with your banker. You feel guilty, like you need to justify the fact that you spent the $10,000 they gave you, still haven't found a job, and have no idea when that money will be paid back. Sure, there are situations where everything works out fine. But more often than not, people regret loaning or borrowing money, especially when it involves friends and family. It's not worth putting your relationship at risk. Don't fool yourself here. Your relationship will change. It will change from family or friend to borrower and lender. The myth tells us that if we loan money to a friend or relative, we are helping them. The reality is that relationships will end either strained or destroyed. In fact, 57% of those polled have seen a friendship or relationship end because of loaned money. And 63% have seen people skip out on repaying a friend or family member. Don't risk your relationships by throwing a loan into the mix. I was talking about this with a friend recently, and she told me how she had loaned money several years ago to someone who was in financial trouble. She did this in a great spirit, truly wanting to help her friend, a great guy who had lost his job, and he needed help, so my friend helped him. Sadly, what happened next changed their relationship forever. A few weeks later, she was checking her Facebook feed and saw the guy's post that day. Just bought the new iPad. Wow, this thing is awesome. Can you imagine how annoying that would be? Again, everyone had great intentions, but she's never going to look at that person in the same way again. In her mind, all she did was buy this guy a new iPad instead of helping him pay rent and buy food, which was her intention. Loaning your signature. While we're talking about loaning money, I want to say a word about co-signing too. That word is no. N-O. Don't do it. Co-signing seems a little more socially acceptable than just flat out loaning someone money, but it can actually put you in a much worse place financially. Co-signing usually comes into play for a car, house, or student loan. This is effectively the same thing as loaning the person actual money, except it has a bit of a surprise party element to it. If your friend or family member defaults, it becomes your debt. But you never know if or when that day will come. If the bank asks for a co-signer, it means that they don't have the confidence that that person who needs the loan will pay it back. Red flag. Seriously, if the bank, whose entire business is built around loaning money, doesn't think someone is good for a loan, they're probably right. They don't make judgment calls on whether your friend is a good person, and they don't care how sweet she may be. They just know she most likely won't pay them back, and when she doesn't, they'll come knocking at your door. If you co-sign, you're just as legally responsible for that debt as your friend. And trust me, the bank will make sure they get their money. Do you think my friend was annoyed when she found out she basically bought someone an iPad? Well, just think how she'd feel if she ended up buying someone a car. So how can you help? In many of these situations, the heart and motivation are almost always good, especially if these relationships seem solid. But loaning or co-signing seldom ends well. If you have the money and the heart to help, my advice would be to skip the loans and just give your friend or family member the money. That's right. Give it to them. Give with the condition that it never has to be paid back and a clear understanding that it is not a loan. But only give if you can afford it, have the cash available, and there are no strings attached. You have to be in a place where you can emotionally let go of that money and know whatever they decide to do with that cash is up to them. It's important to remember, though, that there is a huge difference between helping and enabling. You always have the option to say no. No is a complete sentence. If you are in a situation where you know you shouldn't give someone money because he or she will not be wise with it, you don't have to give them the money. You don't want to enable any bad money habits, putting that person in a worse situation than they were in to begin with. You can say no and walk away. That might seem harsh, but you are helping them by saying no. If you just keep handing them money, you are causing them more harm than good. Debt is a bad choice. This is your life, and you must make up your own mind. How are you going to live it? Are you going to be tied down to credit card bills and student loans for the next 50 years? Or are you going to say that you are done with paying out your hard-earned money to the bank? To move forward, you have to have a clear sense of what you think and believe about debt. This may mean exchanging your depending on debt all the time habit for a steering clear of debt habit. Winston and I make this choice every day, and we decide to steer clear of debt intentionally. We're never going there, and you don't have to either. It's time for you to get rid of whatever debt is in your life, and this time for good. Ready? Then let's take a look at what a debt-free life really looks like. Chapter 5, A Life Without Debt. Imagine for a moment that you had no payments. Zero payments. You owe nothing. Just let that sink in for a bit. The 15th and 30th of each month come around, you receive your paycheck, and that's it. You don't have to pay a single credit card bill. That $500 car loan is now $500 you get to keep. And Sally Mae who? Do you feel the freedom? Do you feel a weight lifted off your shoulders? Does your stress level lower? Let's go a step further. Think about how empowering it would be if you got even more radical and paid off your house in 7 years versus 30 years. What if you invested your house payment at age 35 instead of sending it to the bank? What would retirement look like for you? What if this were your life? Where could you go? What could you do? How much more could you save? How much more could you invest? How much more could you give? It's pretty amazing to think about, isn't it? This dream of having no payments is the mindset I need you to be in as we look into a life getting out of debt and steering clear of it forever. The best news of all is it doesn't have to just be a dream in your imagination. This can be your reality. Choices and trade-offs. In order to make steering clear of debt a habit in your life, you have to really want that for yourself and your family. It's always seemed interesting to me that some people are willing to change their habits in just about every other area of their lives except money. They're willing to follow a diet plan, train for a marathon, or even hire a personal trainer, because these things are important to them and they organize their lives around doing them. So why is it so hard to steer clear of debt? I believe most people fail to steer clear of debt because they simply don't believe they can live a life without debt. They don't see how they can make that kind of drastic change in their lives at this point. You see, if you have credit cards, car loans, or student loans, debt was a choice you made at some point in your life. It's not fun, sexy, or immediately gratifying to kick debt out of your life. In fact, this decision will require a lot of work for a short period of time. And unless you're facing a true financial crisis, you likely don't have a sense of urgency around getting rid of it for good. But if using debt was a choice you made at some point, you can make a new choice today. You can choose to steer clear of it from now on. If you're going to develop the money habits you need to live the life of your dreams, this is a choice you need to make right now. You can live without debt, and I want to show you how. Go ahead, start an avalanche. We've come to my favorite part of the no debt habit, paying off your debt. I wish I had confetti to throw in the air because this is an exciting part of your journey. We have talked so much about the burden of debt and how annoying all those payments are, but now we get to eliminate them for good. Let's talk about how to do it. Once you have the $1,000 emergency fund in place, it's time to get rid of your debt once and for all. The best way to get out of debt is to use what we call the debt snowball. This is where you list all of your debts, except your house, smallest to largest, by balance, not interest rate. Pay the minimum payments on everything else and pay off the smallest debt first. You have to get mad at this debt. Take as much money as you can and throw it at the smallest debt on the list. Once that is paid off, you take what you were paying on that one and roll it to the second smallest debt, and so on until you are debt-free. This is the most effective way to pay off debt because it addresses behavior. You see, money isn't all about math and interest rates. It's also about your behavior. So by paying off the smallest debt first, you get a quick win. And we all love that, don't we? Even if it is a $300 debt on a department store credit card, put it on the list and pay it off. When you're done with it, cross it off the list and move on to the next one. Quick wins help you stay motivated throughout this process and get you ready for the challenge of paying off bigger debts. Go crazy when you're paying off debt. We're going to talk about how to have nice things in the near future and even nicer things later. But if you have debt, your first goal has to be getting free of that burden. That means making some short-term sacrifices for your long-term good. You might even consider getting an extra job for a few months. You may not go out to eat. You may say goodbye to cable. You may cut your lifestyle down significantly. But the more you sacrifice and the more money you put toward your debt right now, the faster you will be completely free to live the life of your dreams. Remember, these sacrifices are only temporary. You won't have to live like this forever. And I don't want you to live like this forever. I'm on your side. I want you to live the life you want. But in order to do that, you may have to make these kinds of sacrifices in order to take control of your money. The encouraging part of this is that the average family we work with who uses the debt snowball pays off all of their debt anywhere from 18 to 24 months. That means you could be debt-free in just a year and a half to 2 years. If you're facing a mountain of debt and you've settled into the mindset that you'll always be in debt, you may not believe that you can be debt-free in less than 2 years. And honestly, depending on your debt and your income, it might take you a little longer than that. Or, believe it or not, it might take you a lot less time. I've seen families get serious about the debt snowball and pay off everything in half the time they expected. Why? Because they get so excited about each payoff that they'll do almost anything to add more money to their get-out-of-debt plan. Plus, once you start the debt snowball rolling, it picks up more and more snow the faster it rolls. That's because every time you pay off one debt, you free up more of your income. That leaves you more money to throw at the next debt on the list. Everyone's journey is going to look different. Some take a little longer than average, and others take just a few months. Either way, the best news of it all is that it's possible. You can become debt-free. Do you feel it in your bones? I hope so. Choose your trade-offs. I want you to go into your new debt-free life with your eyes open. So let's be honest about something up front. Yes, you can choose a life without debt, but that decision will cost you something in the short term. Where there are choices, there are also trade-offs. Because of my decision to live without debt, I have to accept some of the inconveniences. When you live debt-free, you are trading the short-term rush of immediate gratification for the peace of financial success over the long term. And honestly, that's not a choice many people are willing to make. However, as you make steering clear of debt more and more of a habit in your life, the value of all of these little trade-offs starts to become crystal clear. Without a credit card, you won't have the false safety net of an emergency fund. That's why it's crucial to get your $1,000 emergency fund in place quickly. But when you have a full emergency fund, you get the peace that comes with simply writing a check to cover unexpected expenses instead of having to go deeper in debt during an already stressful time. As we mentioned before, when you choose to live without a credit card and you travel, your debit card will have a hold on it from the rental car companies and hotels. So plan for that. In return, you get to enjoy your vacation without worrying about a mailbox full of bills waiting for you when you get home. When you go to buy a new car, you won't even consider a car loan. Sure, you may not be able to buy the same kind of car with cash as you could buy on payments, but that's also the benefit. You won't have a car payment. When your child begins to think about college, you'll have to spend a lot of time researching colleges you can afford, and your child will begin applying for scholarships. And don't freak out, but your child may need to spend some time looking for a job to help pay the tuition. The benefits here are obvious. Your son or daughter will get a great education and get out of school without tens of thousands of dollars in debt that their classmates will have. And you'll set your kids up to win in their own lives, passing on a great legacy of financial responsibility to the next generation. These are just a few examples of some of the inconveniences your new debt-free habit will cause. But I hope you're starting to see how worth it they are. Delayed gratification. A life without debt also requires you to become patient. Giving in to the sudden impulse to buy whatever you want, whenever you want, is no longer an option for you. It is hard to say no to yourself sometimes, and I'll be the first to admit how difficult that is. There are a lot of things I want right this second, but I either don't have the money, or it wouldn't be wise for me to spend money on those things, so I simply don't buy them. There's a reason people say patience is a virtue. Patience allows you to practice delayed gratification, to stop and work hard for something you want. In our world of instant satisfaction by debt, you can basically buy anything you want right when you want it. I think that convenience impacts not only our purchasing habits, but also other areas of our lives. It makes us less patient when we have to wait on other things, like a long-awaited vacation or even a simple doctor's appointment. Debt feeds our impatience on so many levels. But when you introduce financial patience and discipline into your life, you'll be amazed at how other parts of your life seem to relax as well. Credit scores. One of the biggest questions I get when I talk about debt-free living is about what happens to your credit score when you don't have debt. But before we get there, you first need to understand what a credit score is. This term is thrown out there all the time, and that there are so many misconceptions around it. What a credit score really indicates. A credit score is a number that companies use to measure an individual's credit risk. Very exciting, I know. Your credit score is calculated like this. 35% debt payment history, 30% debt amount owed, 15% length of debt history, 10% types of debt used, and 10% new debt. Do you see a theme there? It's all about debt. Your credit score is based on how well you interact with debt. It is not an indication that you're winning financially. It's just an indication that you have and use debt, perhaps a lot. Just so we're clear, you could inherit $1 million today and your credit score wouldn't change a bit. A high credit score doesn't mean you're good with money or that you have a lot of money. It just shows that debt is a big part of your financial life. And all of the pressure around credit scores creates a financial death spiral for a lot of people. They hear early on that they need to establish good credit. So they take out a loan and get a credit card. That makes their credit score go up, which enables them to go deeper into debt. The more debt they have and use, the more opportunities they have to go even deeper. That's how people end up with a great credit score, but hopelessly stuck in debt they may never repay. Does that sound like winning? I don't think so. Here's a helpful clue. If your credit score is higher than your bank account balance, you're headed in the wrong direction. Low score or no score? One thing you need to know as you steer clear of debt is that your credit score will go down over time. This is because you have stopped interacting with debt. Don't panic. This is a good thing. It seems countercultural, I know. It will take time for your credit score to go to undetermined, which is a neutral state. At some point, after years of not using debt at all, your credit score could actually just disappear. By the way, that is what my credit score shows when I pull it up. Undetermined. That means I don't have a credit score. And I have rented an apartment, paid for utilities, and have great insurance rates. A few of those things have required a little extra work. But so what? Remember the whole trade-off idea? Well, this is the trade-off. But it's worth not having a credit score and having to do a little extra work than to deal with the credit cards and loans just to keep a credit score. There are ways to get around in this life without a credit score. I personally have never had an issue not having a credit score. You never know how far cash can take you until you give it a try. The biggest credit score headache. The biggest pushback I get on this topic, though, is with home buying. Now, a mortgage is the one type of debt I won't yell at you for. If you buy your home in the right way, which we'll talk about later. But here's the deal. When you buy a home, a mortgage lender normally pulls up your credit score as part of the application and evaluation process. If you have a good score, they will give you the loan. If you have a bad score, you won't get the loan. Thought-provoking stuff, I know. But you can still get a mortgage even if you don't have a credit score. You need to qualify for what's called manual underwriting. This means an actual human being will look at your ability to repay a loan. Some mortgage companies will call this a no credit score or non-traditional credit process. Usually, for a conventional mortgage, you'll need a solid 12-month mortgage or rental payment history and a few other records like utility, insurance, medical payments, or school tuition. You need to be current on a job for 2 years and current on all of your bills, like your cell phone and insurance. This hassle is obviously a trade-off to living debt-free. Because debt isn't a part of your life, you have freedom and peace. But that means you will have to do some extra heavy lifting for a time while getting qualified for a mortgage. The qualifications do change, so you need to call around and do your due diligence to make sure you have all the information you need to be underwritten for a mortgage. This process will take some time. Again, because you don't have a number for the bank to look at, they have to actually look at you as a person. It might seem crazy to think that a bank doesn't usually take the time to look at a person's employment and bill-paying habits over a period of time before loaning them $300,000, but it's true. It's just easier for them to look at a number on a screen and make their decision. Too bad for them. Making the bank's job easier isn't one of my financial priorities. Say no so you can say yes. Now, those trade-offs aren't too bad, are they? I would say whatever you have to give up to live without debt is worth the peace of mind you'll have and the money you get to keep instead of sending it to the bank. The only person who gets rich when you go into debt is the bank. Period. As you start getting out of debt, all of your short-term sacrifices will be worth it. Imagine being completely debt-free, including your house, by the time you're 45 years old. Your paycheck comes in, and you get to decide what to do with it. You can pay for a vacation outright. Maybe you even save up and buy a second home. What you get back in your life when you are debt-free is margin. The margin of time, money, and emotion. It's amazing. True freedom is getting to live the life you want to live, along with living out your values, desires, passions, and dreams. Getting out of debt goes against every message our culture tells us. Culture says, buy now, pay later. Do what makes you happy in the moment, and don't worry about the future. We are told instant gratification is a good thing because it allows you to live the life you want to live right this second, even if you don't have the money to support it. The problem with this thinking is that it'll catch up with you, either in an unexpected way or just over time as it wears you down. Be different. Debt doesn't have to be a part of your life. You can make a choice today to live differently. You can choose a life of freedom and peace while you live a life on your terms and not Visa's. To get to this place, you must live on less than you make and choose to live wisely and within your means. I know there are going to be temptations along the way. You may even fall back into bad habits with money again. We're all human. No one is perfect. I know you can live this way because I have heard countless stories of people all across the country doing it. And I have been able to do it. For Winston and me, it's meant making decisions about our money ahead of time. Sometimes it's hard. Hard to see all your friends going on vacation. Hard not to get the furniture you really want before the party you're hosting. Hard to turn down a dinner invitation because it's not in the budget, and instead offer to cook at your house. Those choices aren't fun in the moment, but they lead to an abundant life. Winston and I still have to say no at times, but we say no a lot less often than we did when we were first starting out on our financial journey. When we didn't have the money in the budget at the end of the month to go out to eat, we made the decisions necessary to bridge the gap until the next paycheck. In other words, we got creative. Now we are able to say yes to those dinner invitations more often because of what a debt-free lifestyle has enabled us to do: keep our paychecks. Even if there is a mountain of debt between you and me, know that I am cheering you on at the top of my lungs on the other side to keep at it. Keep climbing. Don't stop working hard to pay off debt. You can do it. Keep going. It's possible. When you eventually eliminate debt, you'll get your life back. And nothing you can buy will ever make you feel as great as that. Habit 3. Make a plan for your money. Chapter 6. Permission to spend. Winston and I love to travel together. Getting away is one of our favorite things to do. A few years ago, I had just come off an intense live event season, and Winston was busier than ever with his work. We wanted to start a family soon, so we planned to take one last big vacation while it was just the two of us. We decided to go to our number one relaxation destination, the beach. When we were on the plane heading to Florida, Winston leaned over and said, "Rachel, it's been a crazy travel season for you. I want you to relax and not worry about the budget on this trip. We both know what our budget is for the overall vacation, but I want you to just spend money and not worry. I will keep up with the budget, If we get close to our limits, I'll tell you and we can back off. But for now, just enjoy yourself and don't worry about money. I looked at him and said, "Babe, you're telling me I don't have to think about the budget and can just spend money?" He nodded. I couldn't have been happier in that moment. I told him he was letting me live in one of my greatest strengths, my spiritual gift of spending money. For the next few days, I was going to get to live it out. I was so excited. A few hours later, we're sitting by an amazing pool overlooking the beach. The setting was something like out of a magazine. A server walked by, and I asked her if they had chips and guacamole. "Yes," she replied. So I asked her to bring me an order, not even thinking about the price. All seemed right in the world. I was sitting by the pool with my husband, soaking in the sun. I had my favorite food, chips and guac, on the way. And I didn't have to worry about a budget. Or so I thought. When the food came, it was delicious, but it made me thirsty. I grabbed a menu to look at the drinks. Only then did I notice the price next to the chips and guacamole. $23. I almost choked. Did the avocados fall from heaven? The Mexican restaurant down the street from my house charges $4 for the same thing. I tried to not let it rattle me, so I pushed through the discomfort and looked at the drinks. I wanted one of those frozen fruity concoctions, but there was nothing on the menu less than $20. The same server came by to see what I wanted, and I remember giving myself the old pep talk I hadn't heard in a while. "Rachel, just spend the money. You're a spender. Do it. This is what you're good at." I opened my mouth to place my order, but I had a hard time spitting out the words. I couldn't stop thinking about how much everything cost. Then the drink arrived. Each time I took a sip, I couldn't help but think, that was a dollar. That was another dollar. I realized that there was no way to enjoy my budget-free self any longer. I so badly wanted to enjoy living without a budget for a few days and just spend without thinking about it, but I couldn't. The budget habit had become too deeply ingrained in me. I looked over at Winston sitting next to me at the pool and told him I couldn't do it any longer. I didn't know if I was spending too much now, which might mean I may not be able to order an appetizer at dinner that night. He laughed. Then we sat by the pool, budgeting out each meal of the trip. Once we did that, I knew I could order and enjoy what came without any stress or anxiety. Money and emotions. You have to understand that I love spending money. Love it. Probably more than I should. I'm not sure which I love more, the thrill of the hunt or the transaction process. Maybe a little of both. Either way, I'm a woman on a mission when I have cash, a plan, and something I need to buy. So I am the first person to admit that having and following a budget is a challenge. The word budget sounds so restricting, boring, and dull. We really need to find a better word. Until then, budget will have to do. Budget misconceptions. I used to believe that living on a budget would mean I would never get to go out to eat, go shopping, or take vacations. I'd have to sit at home and hunt for coupons for the rest of my life. In my mind, living on a budget meant not living life at all. I'd rather buy the brand I want and not settle for the cheaper one. I would rather live my life and enjoy it instead of setting aside every want and desire so I could live within the parameters of some budget. I grew up understanding the need for and the value of budgeting, but it didn't come naturally to me. The worst part of anticipating a budget was all the little details. There seemed to be so much to keep up with in order to be successful. The whole thing had potential to stress me out. I viewed the budget as a straitjacket, forcing me to be extremely organized all the time, and that's not how I'm wired. Rewiring. Growing up, I realized I wasn't a detail person from having to share a bathroom with my older sister, Denise. Her side of the bathroom was perfect in every way. Everything was organized and color-coordinated, her toothbrush, cotton balls, face wash, and anything she was going to use that day was laid out on the counter in the order of their application. When you opened the drawer, her headbands and scrunchies, thank you 90s fashion, were matched according to color. Even her hair dryer cord was wrapped perfectly around the handle. Her half of the bathroom looked like something you'd see in one of those 15 ways to organize your life articles. My side of the sink? To say it was the complete opposite would be an understatement. There was toothpaste everywhere. The cord of my hair dryer was so tangled that it was effectively 6 inches long. I had to stand up against the wall and bend over a little bit because the dryer wouldn't reach the top of my head. There was always a film of hairspray on my side of the counter, so it felt sticky and gross. Makeup was spilled everywhere. Looking back, it was actually really disgusting. Of course, I could easily find whatever I needed in an instant. But no one in my family appreciated my preference for convenience over tidiness. And our closets? Denise's closet was so well organized that when I borrowed her clothes, usually without asking, she would notice something was out of place the second she opened the door. As a result, another argument would break out. My closet? Well, it was like opening the door to a black hole. You were afraid to dig in too far because you might get lost forever. When it came to organization, I simply had a lot to learn. Setting aside childish things. As I've gotten older, I've come to grips with the reality that I have no choice but to become more organized and pay attention to details. My life, like yours, has a lot of moving parts, so being on top of details is crucial. While my closet and bathroom sink are still works in progress, I've certainly grown in this area of my life. I still had to deal with all this hardwiring when it came to living on a budget. Thanks to my parents, though, I eventually had all the tools I needed to create and live on a budget that fits my personality type. No excuses. Mom and Dad each gave us our own checking accounts when we turned 15. Every month, they would figure out how much we needed to spend on our clothes, sports fees, and other normal teenage expenses. And they deposit that money into our accounts instead of paying for each thing individually. That meant we had to keep up with the money and pay for those things ourselves. If we ran out of money, we knew Mom and Dad would never bail us out. We either had to push through the next month broke or find a way to make some extra money. After a couple of really bumpy months, spending way too much, way too fast, I realized I had to get a handle on things. I needed some control, some guardrails for how, when, and where I was going to spend my money. Enter the budget. From age 15, I had a love-hate relationship with the budget. I love what it does and what it enables me to do. I love that it makes my money go further. I love that it sets me and Winston up to win today, tomorrow, and over the long haul. But sometimes I hate doing it. There, I admit it. Dave Ramsey's daughter doesn't always love doing a budget. I hate having to sit down and think of every little thing I may need to spend money on a month in advance. It hurts having to tell future me no to purchases I think I'll want to make later. But over time, budgeting hasn't just gotten bearable, it's become enjoyable. Crazy, right? I've had to get over a lot of emotional obstacles to doing a budget over the years, and now I want to help you do the same. Freedom and responsibility. As I took a good look at my resistance to living on a budget, I had to face a tough truth. It came down to me not wanting to grow up and be accountable. One thing we're supposed to learn as we transition into adulthood is that with freedom comes responsibility. In fact, every freedom is balanced by an equal amount of responsibility. You can't drive a car without following the road signs. You can't fill a pantry without having a job that pays for those groceries. You can't be physically fit without committing to a consistent workout schedule. Somewhere along the way, many of us have convinced ourselves that it's okay to do whatever makes us happy in the moment without considering the impact of our decisions will have on our futures. When people live like this, they upset the balance that exists between freedom and responsibility. Our unwillingness to grow up in some areas, like how we use money, will only force us to live a life on someone else's terms and not our own. Being an adult isn't all fun and games. If you've been adult longer than 20 minutes, you know this well. Freedom doesn't exist outside of responsibility. If we want to live life on our terms, then we have to acknowledge that there are certain boundaries we need to determine for ourselves. And then we must live within those guidelines. If we want to take control of our money instead of having our money take control of us, then we have to learn to live within a budget. Plan for your money. I often hear a common theme when it comes to life and money. People tell me, I just want to enjoy my money and trust that everything will work out without me having to worry about every little dime I spend. Most people don't want to feel like they're living out of control, but they fear that living on a budget will mean having no life at all. Working through that kind of thinking can be hard. Is there an easy solution? Yes. But spenders like me won't be ready for that solution until we've identified and addressed the real problem. Namely, that our wants, desires, and lifestyles can sometimes outpace our means. Our natural inclination is to want what we want, when we want it, and on our terms. When we were babies, we were the center of the universe. If we needed something, all we had to do was cry, laugh, or make cute little noises, and someone would be there to take care of whatever we wanted. As we've gotten older, we're supposed to move away from that idea that the world revolves around us and our needs. However, some people have never crossed that bridge. They continue to live as if they need whatever they desire at that moment, and they act as if whatever thing they want is essential for life itself. And this is rarely the case. People often tell me, I make good money, but I have no clue where it goes. That reminds me of a John Maxwell quote. He says, a budget is simply telling your money where to go instead of wondering where it went. How often do people get to the end of the month and honestly wonder where their money went? They feel completely out of control and like they have absolutely no margin in their lives. They pay the bills, but there doesn't seem to be a lot left over to enjoy or use however they want. It is defeating for them to know they make decent money but still feel broke. I hear these kinds of things all the time. Rachel, how can I shop for groceries and buy organic products on a budget? How can I take a great vacation on a budget? How can I buy some new clothes for the spring season on a budget? How can I throw a creative party for my son on a budget? Those are great questions that show a desire to live a great life but still be responsible with money. However, the problem lies deeper than what appears on the surface. As I dig down into the details of each person's situation, what I often find is that they're asking a completely different question. They want to know, how can I do everything I want to do without having to make any sacrifices? This is the challenge. Until we accept the reality that the freedom money brings also comes with the responsibility to manage it well, we'll never get to pursue the life we truly want. Instead, we'll always be playing catch-up with our random desires and whims. The unwillingness to say no to yourself is a terrible way to live. There is no magic formula here. Until you have a budget, you won't know how much you can spend, and you won't know when to tell yourself no. It's that simple. Wanting the best. I'm on your team when it comes to wanting you to live a great life. I want you to be able to go out to great dinners with your spouse or friends. I want you to throw a cute birthday party for your son. I want you to go play a round of golf. I wish I could wave a financial wand that would give you the permission to do anything you wanted to do without worry, guilt, or responsibility. But I can't. And seriously, I still struggle with saying no to myself sometimes. Most of us do. When you see something you want, even something small and insignificant, it never feels good to say no. When Winston and I were preparing for our first child, we went to register at a few different stores. Who knew how much baby gear was out there? It's unbelievable how much stuff you can buy for a 7-pound human being who can't even roll over yet. On top of that, it doesn't help that so much of it is downright adorable. I had to resist the urge to buy or register for every cute thing I laid my eyes on. The biggest flare-up came when Winston and I walked through the doors of Pottery Barn Kids. Everything in the store was so charming. I felt like I could have it all. Part of my brain just shut down, time stopped, and I immediately fell in love with just about everything I picked up. I had often heard people say, "I just want the best for my kids." And I would think, well, sometimes that means saying no to them and not giving them everything they want. Now it was my turn, and my daughter wasn't even born yet, and I had convinced myself in less than 2 seconds that she needed the best of everything. One of those items was an adorable washcloth set. That's right, washcloths. So after my baby showers had come and gone, I picked up a set of these white washcloths with a lavender plaid border. I was so pleased with myself that I had found the most precious washcloths in the world for the most precious baby in the world. No new mom syndrome here. I was thinking with pure logic, obviously. I told Winston how I needed to order at least 2 more sets. He thought I was crazy. In his pragmatic, practical point of view, he reminded me that I could buy functional washcloths anywhere for half the price. In fact, we didn't need baby washcloths at all. We had a whole linen closet full of them. Even so, the idea of saying no to these washcloths was physically painful for me. Now, could we afford to buy these washcloths? Yes. But because we set a baby budget, there was no room for that item, which, honestly, was pretty unnecessary. The damage to the budget would be minimal, but it wasn't the most effective use of what we had set aside. The same is true for everyday things like food. Going to the grocery store and sticking to a list and a specific spending amount can be tough. You may want to buy organic fruit and juice pouches for the kids. The idea of having to limit on what you can and cannot spend can be difficult to manage when you're running through the store after work trying to make it home in time to prepare dinner. Sometimes it feels like there's no time for sticking to a budget. But here's a different perspective. Instead of looking at a budget as confining, look at it as permission to spend. After living on a budget for years now, it's hard to imagine getting along without it. Even when Winston told me at the beach that I didn't have to think about the budget, my first thought was, "Freedom! Here I come!" But then the habit kicked in. I realized something through that experience. Living on a budget isn't constrictive or confining. It's the opposite. It's the only way to live with any freedom. A budget helps me enjoy my money more because I am in control of what I'm spending. A budget is not a straitjacket. It is not a killjoy. A budget helps me live the life that I want to live and do the things I truly value. What a budget isn't. A budget is more than just keeping up with the bills. Some people who think they're living on a budget really just means they pay what they owe every month and get by. They aren't living on an intentional plan. The bills come in, they pay them, and they hope there's money left over. A budget isn't trying to create space on your maxed out credit cards. The idea that living on a budget means staying within your credit limit is delusional. Paying off your credit card bill every month does not mean you're sticking to a budget. In this mindset, you're just swiping at every opportunity that presents itself, and then paying off the consequences at the end of the month. Using credit cards is like living your life through a rearview mirror. A huge chunk of your paycheck covers food you have already eaten, movies you've already seen, and clothes you have already bought. You are living your financial life in the past instead of telling your money where to go for the future. Where you want to go. A budget gives you the permission to spend your money in ways that will take you where you want to go. A budget means you can actually spend on stuff you want. The purpose of a budget is not to limit your freedom, but to give you freedom, with some boundaries in place. It's amazing how a plan will free you up to love your life instead of making you feel like you're always running to catch up. When you plan this way, you're able to look at the future and gauge your life more effectively, instead of just spending money throughout the month, not knowing where it's going. People who live on purpose in any area of their lives, including money, are people who not only win, but thrive. People who have great marriages work hard on having great relationships. They may read books, go to counseling, and have date nights. People who are healthy and in shape work out and eat right. People who are great parents listen to good child-rearing advice, read books on discipline, talk to other moms and dads, and cultivate great relationships with their kids. So people who win in life have to work hard and be intentional. The same is true when you're talking about your money. To win with money means you must make money work for you. That is what a budget is all about. Money doesn't just drift into your savings account. Debt doesn't get paid off on its own. You have to be purposeful and take control of it. You have to tell your money what to do. Giving yourself a raise. Many people have told me when they started living on a budget, it felt like they got a raise. It's amazing how much money we can spend throughout the month on things that don't really matter. $10 here, $5 there can really add up. But when you sit down and are intentional with every dollar you have, every dollar will stretch further. That means you'll get to do more of the stuff you want to do and plan for the things you'll do in the future. You can change your mindset, your habits, and your life. Freedom and responsibility go hand in hand. You don't get one without the other. That means you can't live life on your terms and not pay attention to how you use your money. If you want to create good money habits, you must be willing to do whatever it takes, even if it's uncomfortable in the beginning. As you do, you'll find that you'll do more with your money than you ever thought possible. Now that you know a budget is an important and crucial money habit, let's talk about how to actually build one. Chapter 7, Tell Your Money What to Do. One of my friends decided she was going to run a marathon. She's one of the most disciplined people I know, so it wasn't a complete surprise. Personally, I have no idea why anyone wants to run unless they're being chased by someone or something. For my friend, though, running was something she enjoyed. She was excited about the challenge of getting ready for the longest distance she had ever run. My friend is also a planner. She did her research about running marathons as she was getting started. I couldn't tell you the number of different marathon running schedules she downloaded and reviewed. She read books, read blogs, and talked to people she knew who had done it before. One of the secrets she discovered was that you have to decide everything in advance. She needed to know what days she was going to run and what days she was going to cross train. She even needed to know on what day she needed to rest and not do anything at all. Once she worked out her training schedule, she knew everything she had to do every day of the week leading up to her race. One of her mentors explained that this is important because it would keep her from getting confused by her body and the voices in her head. She knew she wasn't always going to wake up and feel like doing the scheduled activity for the day. But if she checked every box as she designed it, then she would have done everything to prepare for her marathon. I was so proud of her. She ran the race in the time she had predicted. And, since then, she's run many other marathons in the same way. It works for her. She didn't do anything that others hadn't done before. She simply wrote out a plan and then worked the plan by implementing the details. This kind of planning works with running marathons, and it also works with managing your money. Getting started. A budget's primary job, its only job really, is to tell your money where to go. That's actually a biblical principle. Suppose one of you wants to build a tower. Won't you first sit down and estimate the cost to see if you have enough money to complete it? Luke 14:28. No one ends up a millionaire by accident. You can accidentally lose a lot of money, but you don't keep, build, and multiply dollars by drifting into it. It has to be done on purpose. It's probably safe to say at some point you've received money from a paycheck, a gift, or a tax return, and when you looked up a few weeks later, the money seemed to have just disappeared. That's a frustrating experience, especially when it's money you've worked hard for. You put in long, hard hours to earn that money, but have nothing to show for it 30 days later. It's time to tell your money where to go. It's time to change the outcome of your life by developing new habits. One of those habits has to be building and living on a budget. Not only is this important when you're getting started, but it also becomes even more important as you begin to make more money. Getting started is easier than you might think. Timing is everything. The first principle to getting started is learning when to do a budget. A budget isn't just keeping track of expenses throughout the month. It's being intentional with your money ahead of time. So you'll need to do a budget before the month begins. That means planning ahead for what is going to happen. This is a simple yet important part of budgeting. The goal is to be proactive with your money rather than reactive. You need to create a new budget every month, and you'll have to keep modifying your budget because every month is going to be different. Most of your major bills will be consistent month to month, so that'll be easy. For instance, since Winston and I have been doing a budget for a while, we know our food and other categories will generally stay the same month to month. But what's important is to look at the month ahead and anticipating what you have coming up that would be different from the month before, like buying Christmas presents, doing some home repairs, a scheduled doctor visit, or paying for a trip. Write it down. Second, write down your budget. Don't rely on your memory or your ability to do math in your head. You can do this on a simple sheet of paper, on your computer, on your phone, or even through a website or online budgeting tool. Like the only one I recommend, everydollar.com. No matter where you choose to physically put your budget, it needs to be somewhere you can easily access it and review it throughout the month. Put every dollar in a category. My favorite type of budget